Position number 1028, reel 1.
That's fine. Mr. Duncan Bullman, reel 1. So if I could ask you first of all, Mr. Bullman, about the period just before the end of the war, when I believe you were in Italy. Really, it's to get your advance into Austria, to put that in some sort of context. Could you tell me about that?
Yes. Well, the 6th Royal Tank Regiment was near to Ferrara in northern Italy when the fighting came to an end. And it was only 2 or 3 weeks afterwards that we were told the regiment was being sent to Austria in order to chase out the Yugoslav partisans who were having a fine old time looting and plundering a defeated country. So our tanks were put onto transporters and we were carried up north through the Alps to a town called Tarvis on the Austrian border, and then into Austria, and we got off the tank transporters near to Klagenfurt. Then we drove through Klagenfurt and out into the country to a place called Ruden, which was near the river Drau. And our orders were to send all the Yugoslavs we could see back over the river Drau into their own country, Yugoslavia.
What was your impression of the Yugoslav situation when you arrived in that area?
Well, we didn't actually have a lot of intimate contact with the Yugoslavs. They were mainly 2 or 3 chaps armed with rifles. They were not organized in any military body, and they'd just been enjoying themselves. And I think some of them were hoping that the southern part of Carinthia would be reallocated back to Yugoslavia. But of course our tanks were a pretty good argument, and we soon sent them packing over the river Drau.
What was the situation like in Austria, you know, in your area, at that time soon after the war? Was there much destruction, devastation?
Well, I'm happy to say that the towns and villages were not destroyed. People were still living in their houses. On the roadside, particularly in wooded areas, there were a great many abandoned vehicles, most of them military vehicles, which had been left there by the defeated armies. In some cases, they'd been shot up, but in most cases, they'd simply been abandoned. And one of the interesting things for the British soldiers to do was to see if they could find a vehicle and get it running as their private motor car. And indeed, some officers got hold of Mercedes and very respectable vehicles and had them running around. My friend and I, we were not so ambitious. We got hold of a Volkswagen, the people's car. Yes. This particular Volkswagen was an amphibious one, which meant that you had a propeller at the back end which you could push down and engage with the crankshaft of the engine. And in this way, by running the engine in the car, you could drive across the water. And we got this going on one of the lakes and had a lot of fun with it.
And that worked, did it? You know, was it
genuine? Yeah. Yes. Of course, from the military purpose, the object was to be able to cross rivers.
What sort of reception were you given by the Austrians?
Well, they were pleased to see us. This soon became apparent. After all, it's better to have a reasonably behaved British soldier than a Yugoslav with a rifle who wants to steal your possessions. And we had no problem with the Austrians. They didn't give us any interference in our military duties.
You were saying about the lack of devastation in the villages, anyway, in the countryside. What was the situation regarding food and other resources in Austria? Did you get an impression of this?
Well, I think that many of the Austrians were very hard up for food. The distribution of food was not well organized. The war had left them in rather a disorganized state, and I'm sure that many of them hadn't enough to eat. We were lucky, we had our army rations, and we lived on them.
Also, I was wondering, you know, if there were any sort of pockets of resistance in the area that you knew of, you know, sort of Nazis still about and...
No, I think we had no opposition from Austrians or Germans. There was no fighting in the sense of the war.
Were you aware of the displaced persons and refugees in Austria?
Yes. We would see groups of people wandering about, and I think early on we realized that many of these did not come from Austria but came from the east. In particular, we saw groups of Cossacks with their horses and their women and children, and they were living as a group, usually on the countryside, not in the towns. And we understood that in the past they had been fighting with the Germans against the Russians.
Did you know anything about the camps that they were eventually put into?
Not in detail, except we were told that one of the major centres was near the town of Villach.
Those that you saw, you know, were they well behaved? Did they cause any problem at all from what you saw?
No, they gave us no trouble at all. And I think we realised that they were mainly concerned with looking after themselves and their families.
Did you have any idea of what they had been doing in the war, these people from the east?
We couldn't converse with them because of the language problem. And really, for us, it was hearsay that they had been fighting against the Russians.
So really fighting for the Germans?
Yes.
Is that what you assumed?
Yes. We understood they had German officers.
Could I now ask you, having described the sort of context, when you first heard about the repatriation of these people to Russia, first of all, had you heard of anything like the Yalta Agreement? Did that mean anything to you at this time?
Oh, yes. During the war, we used to get army newspapers, and I would keep abreast in broad outline of what was happening on the Russian front, on the Western front, and of course I knew on my own front, the Italian front. And we had been informed of the Yalta Agreement, and it became a matter of discussion that these Russian Cossacks were going to be sent back to Russia. And I don't think we were very happy about it, because we didn't imagine that their reception in Russia would be friendly.
Did you ever hear about the issue of screening, you know, that these people should be separated out into different categories? You know, those that had fought for the Germans and the older people who had come over in 1917 with their, you know, and the wives and children. Did you have any knowledge of that?
No, I did not.
So could I ask you then of what you witnessed about the repatriation, and if you could take me through from the beginning when you first heard that you were going to be involved in whatever way?
Well, it was at the end of May when my squadron had moved from Rudin to the town of Wolfsberg in Carinthia. And we were told that these Cossacks were going to be driven in lorries to the town of Judenburg, and that our tanks were to be stationed along the roadside so that as they were driven past, they would see the tanks and know it would not be wise to try and escape. And on 2 days of the week, the 29th and 31st of May, my tanks were picketed along the roadside, 7, 9 o'clock in the morning, and on the first day, 7 or 8 lorries drove down the road, and on the second day, a larger number. Nobody jumped out of the lorries. There were armored cars traveling between them, and clearly it was not a good moment for people inside the lorries to escape.
Did you actually see the people? You know, could you clearly see them?
Well, no, the lorries were covered, so all you could see was as they drove past in the back, you could see that people were standing.
What did they know? What was the state of, what was their demeanour, would you say?
Well, I don't think from a lorry driving past you can really describe the conditions inside. It's rather like a railway goods wagon going past. You know there are people inside, but you're not able to comment. It would not have taken them very long, perhaps 2 to 3 hours, I think, to get from where they started, Villach, to Judenburg. And all we knew was where they were going.
Had anyone tried to escape? What were your orders?
Our orders were to shoot. And, of course, if you're shooting with a machine gun, which was all we had on the tanks, it's not easy to, for example, try and shoot somebody in the leg. You shoot, and whether they get killed or not is really beyond you. Well, our orders were to shoot if anyone jumped off the lorries. Of course, we would have had to shoot with our tank machine guns, and it's not easy, for example, to shoot somebody in the leg if you're firing a machine gun. Whether the person gets killed or not is really beyond you.
Do you think you would have shot if, say, a child or woman had got out of the lorry?
I think we would have had to, because we were given orders. Very likely we would have not shot directly at the person, but just shot to one side and hoped that that would frighten them and make them stop. Certainly I think that's what I would have done.
Did you talk between yourselves about this? You know, I wondered if you had any idea of how other people felt about the operation.
Well, we soldiers generally felt sympathetic towards the Cossacks. We would rather that they had been left where they were than have them sent back.
You indicated earlier that you had some idea of what might be happening to them when they returned. Is that right?
Yes. For example, we heard shortly after these events that there had been several suicides when they got to Judenburg. So it was clear that they were not looking forward to going back to Russia.
Were you ever told not to talk about this incident? You know, I wondered if you were given any instructions about it at the time.
Not that I can remember, no.
Did you hear of it happening in other parts, you know, in other areas? Events like this that you weren't concerned with?
No, I don't think I did.
This raises, of course, doesn't it, this issue of obeying orders during the war. You know, you were saying that probably people would, and you would have had to shoot had the order been given, you know, had anyone jumped off the lorry. You know, I wonder what you feel about that now, you know. Is there any order that you would not countenance obeying with the benefit of hindsight?
Well, looking back to the war, I always remember that when I got an order, for example, to advance, I would always light my pipe before carrying it out. And the advantage of this was that very often, whilst I was filling my pipe, another order would come through telling me to do something else. And I think that in war, it's very rash to rush off and do something on the spur of the moment. It's better to think first.
I was thinking, you know, with some of the these very unpleasant tasks, rather like the repatriation, and one hears criticism of people like Kurt Waldheim, that perhaps he should not have obeyed, you know, he should not have obeyed the order that he did, you know, connected with Jewish and British POWs. Do you think, can you understand that attitude, that perhaps some orders you should sort of stick your neck out and not obey them if you think they're immoral.
Well, I think the majority of soldiers in war do not get involved in these moral questions. For an ordinary regimental soldier, it's normally an order which you can understand the purpose of. You know, shoot the enemy and so on. And you don't have to worry about whether it's right or wrong. In my own case, apart from this, shall we say, removed contact with the Russians, I never during the war had any orders that I was worried about carrying out.
Was it explained to you at all, you know, what why these Russians were being sent back by the people who gave you orders? You know, did they ever deem it necessary?
Oh, yes, because in the strict sense of the word, they were accused of treason. They had been fighting against their own country.
But how about the sort of older people or the women and children?
Well, it's very clear if they had been handed over to the British, nobody would have dreamt of shooting the women and children. But indeed, the whole background to the Cossacks was clearly different from our military background, and we do not expect British soldiers to be travelling with their families.
These lorries that were passing, did they have the families on them, or were they just the men? Could you tell?
I would say that they had the families on them, although, again, if you ask me how many women and children there were, I just wouldn't know.
So after this had happened, you know, was there much talk about the event between yourselves, maybe?
I suppose it would have been talked about for a week or so and then forgotten.
And that was that the end of the matter, so far as you were concerned?
Yeah. In 1945, I was keeping a diary in a notebook, and I would like to read an entry which I made on the 29th of May, 1945, which was a Tuesday. It was arranged at Yalta that the German officers and Cossack men of a combined corps that had been captured by us after fighting against the Russians should be handed over to the Soviet for justice, in brackets, question mark. Understandably, the British and Americans have got the wind up lest these POWs should discover this intention, and I believe false information has been given to the prisoners about their destiny. Anyhow, they are being got rid of as quickly as possible, and the transfer to the Russians takes place at Judenburg. A squadron has been called upon to picket the road with 46th Division from Wolfsburg north at certain times this week. The ground demands a force of 3 troops, HQ 1 and 2, north of Twimberg, and 1 troop, mine, that is number 4 troop, just north of Wolfsburg. Jim, Bob and Bill are thus temporarily detached with their troops. I was out in position at 0700 hours yesterday and 0900 hours today. We had a wait of approximately 2 and 1 hours respectively before 7 or 8 three-tonners, interspersed with Greyhound armoured cars, swept past at speed. Then we were stood down. Shall I continue? My second entry is on the 31st of May, 1945, a Thursday. The weather has been perfect this week, and today I was again in splendid form. Up at 0545, breakfast at the cookhouse with 4 troop, and out at our picket positions by 0700. Today's convoy of Russians was a much larger one, but without incident. I feel sorry for the poor devils. After break, we were stood down at 1000 hours. I gave the troop a second German lesson, most of it recapitulating the first. They are very slow to pick it up, but it must be very strange to them.
Thank you very much. That was very interesting. Good job people keep diaries, I think. Did you ever see or come into contact with Russians in that area of Austria?
No, the Russians were further east, and our main feeling then was that the Austrians were kindly disposed towards us, because they realized we had stopped the Russians coming to take over their part of the country.
So how did the British troops, do you think, perceive the Russians at that time of the war? After all, they had been our allies, hadn't they, in the war?
Well, I don't think there were any anti-Russian feelings amongst the troops. We hadn't at that time experienced the Cold War. So, really, the British troops were happy that they were being well received by the Austrians, and that was that.
This issue of repatriation, when did it next sort of impinge on your life? Can you think? You know, did you then forget all about it? I wondered when you next heard about the
well,
issue.
This would be much later. I think not until the 80s, or certainly the 70s, when I bought the book by Bethel called The Last Secret and read it. And naturally, having been involved, I was interested in the story which he told.
Were you surprised at the full extent, you know, when you read the story of it? Did it sort of...
Well, I don't think I was surprised, because, as my diary shows, we had our misgivings at the time. And I would say it was one of the unhappy events of my military life.
Of course, there is a trial ongoing soon, isn't there? You know, the trial Tolstoy against Aldington coming up, you know, whereby Lord Aldington has been labelled a war criminal, has he not, by Nigel Watts and Count Tolstoy. You know, have you any opinion of that? You know, do you think it's possible for a British brigadier to be called a war criminal in, you know, in the light of the repatriation issue?